Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on the lawyers when we come back. You know, over the past century, we Americans who were once independent, capable, and able to manage our own financial, medical, and legal affairs have now been reduced to dependence, to incompetence, incapacity. We have now been made wards of these powerful commercial, financial, medical, and legal corporations, the cartels, and the bureaucratic institutions of government in our modern industrial society. And we've been taught to rely upon these paid professionals, you know, like bankers to manage our financial affairs, doctors manage and treat our health problems, lawyers direct our business and legal affairs, instead of relying upon our own good common sense. That's why I contend that it's time that we Americans who were once able to catch our own fish learn once again how to fish, instead of being fed by these paid professionals. And regaining our power of attorney is the single most important step in regaining our capacity, regaining our rights, regaining our liberties, and regaining our duties. Now, if you'd like to learn more about courtroom strategy and procedure, why don't you write to the law school and ask for our free general law CD package. And remember, it's educational, it's informative, it's informational, and it's entertaining. And best of all, it's free. It's a public service. Just call the law school and ask for it. It's 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. If you're online, go to the website and send an email. You send that email to George Gordon School of Common Law, and you can click onto it. It's very easy. Just go to the website. It's a long email address, but if you go to the website, georgegordon.org, you can just click onto the email machine and then send that email request. Remember, that's georgegordon.org or call direct 417-273-4967. Hey, we've been talking about lawyers, and the other day I got a letter. It's dated 227, it's fairly recent. And this person named Nomi, N-O-M-I. I don't know if that's a man or a woman, a boy or a girl. Nomi. It's an odd name. N-O-M-I. Anyway, he said, someone recently recommended that I visit your website. While there, I read your article on the Levitical priesthood of Tennessee. Question. Where did you get your information about the conduct of legal proceedings in ancient Israel? Since nothing you say matches the Bible description of these places, people, or processes, I can only conclude that there exists some book telling the inner history of these things, and I'd like to read it. Looking forward to your answer, and with thanks for your help. Signed, N. Well, N, I can't tell whether your letter is derogatory or positive. It says, and I underlined this, and I put exclamation points. You know, when I get letters like this, they come down on my desk. And then I read it, and I say to myself, this listener says, since nothing you say matches the Bible description. Oh, I want to take exception with that. Oh, I dissent, and know me. I don't agree with that at all. In fact, every statement that I made came right out of the Bible. Now, I presume that you must have read the Bible because you're the one that said, since nothing you say matches the Bible. So, it would have to come from somebody who had read the Bible, and then, based upon what you read and what you knew, what you know, compared to what I said, came from the Bible, and you know that it didn't come from the Bible because you read it. It's the only conclusion that I could come to. And I'm sitting here saying to myself, Jesus, maybe this guy isn't reading the same Bible I am. Maybe you're reading the Koran. Maybe you're reading Buddha. Maybe you're, I don't know. Now, I read the King James issue of the Bible. I always figured that if the King James was good enough for Moses, by God, it's good enough for me. So, there you are. So, write me a letter and tell me about the King James Version of Moses, would you? But you said, since nothing you say matches the Bible description of these places, people, or processes, I can only conclude that. I can only conclude. Well, this is what we call in law reaching a conclusion doesn't match the facts. I can only conclude. Sometimes people will object, you know, you'd be sitting in court and it draws conclusions from insufficient facts. I don't know if you've got all the facts, Nomi. I'm going to give you the facts, but I'm just saying, well, maybe you don't have all the facts. And the answer to your conclusion that there must exist some book telling the inner history of these things. Okay. There may be. I don't know. I don't read every book that's ever been written. In fact, Solomon made an observation one time. He said, of the writing of books, there is no end. Of the writing of books, there's no end. I might agree with that. I'm surrounded by books on three walls here in my office. I haven't even read all the books that are in my office here. And I haven't read all of these inner processes. What'd you say? I can only conclude that there exists some book telling the inner history of these things. And I'd like to read it. So your statement that says, I would like to read it, says to me that you are a sincere inquisitor and you'd like to know where I got this information. So get your pen and paper out. Or if you've got a pencil, sharpen it on both ends and let me tell you the story. If you're referring to the Levitical priesthood of Tennessee, there are 16 indicii in which I listed the policeman as being the high priest's servant, crime being sin, going to jail being put in ward, the courthouse being the temple, the courtroom being the holy place, the judge is the high priest, the bench is the altar, the bar is the veil, the lawyer is the intercessor, the plea is the prayer. Being guilty of a crime is being guilty of sin, a criminal is a sinner, a fine is a sin offering. The court costs are the heave offerings. The Supreme Court is a counterfeit of the Holy of Holies, and the civil service or the judicial system is, in fact, the Levitical priesthood. So, let me tell you the story. You read the story, but there are probably other listeners out there that have not read or have not seen the story. The story, I think, is on our website. In fact, Nomi said that he got it off of our website. Goes to show you how often I read our website, doesn't it? I don't even know what's on it. And that's because I don't handle that. There's another guy here that does that, and I presume that he must have published this article which says that a preacher approached me in Suwanee, Tennessee some years ago, and he asked if it was true that I practiced the law of Moses. This story is true. I mean, I don't have to read it. I could sit here and tell you the story. I don't remember the guy's name. I do remember he was a preacher. I was sitting there. Tepper Saucy, you know, he used to have an annual meeting down here in Suwanee, Tennessee. And like a convention. There'd be several hundred people, you know, show up. And he needed to have somebody talk about something other than Main Street or Miracle on Main Street, so he invited me down one time along with four or five other guys and said, well, would you like to come down here and talk? And so I said, well, I would be delighted to come down here and talk. And it was about a three-day meeting, as I recall, a three-day convention and maybe four. And so I got down there to the hotel where it was being conducted, and I went in to eat breakfast. And while I was sitting in the coffee shop eating breakfast, this guy came up to me and he said, well, Mr. Gordon, may I sit down? Well, I'm a pretty friendly kind of guy. And I said, well, sit down, partner. You know, get a cup of coffee or whatever you're going to do. He said, would you mind if I ask you some questions? And I said, well, shoot away. Sure, you can sit there just to ask me questions all day long. Now, you know, that doesn't mean I'm going to tell you any answers or that I'm going to tell you anything that you didn't know before, but, you know, if you want to ask questions, get after it. So I'm sitting there eating my eggs, and this guy, he asked me if I practiced the law of Moses. Well, I thought that was a pretty straightforward question. Do you practice the law of Allah? Do you practice Buddhism? Do you practice Roman Catholicism? Do you practice Lutheran theology? You know, it's a pretty straightforward question. Do you vote the straight Republican ticket? And so I said to the man, I said, yeah, that's right. I practice the Mosaic law. And then he asked me a second question. He said, well, do you practice the sacrifices? And when he asked me that question, I perceived that this fellow was going to Nowheresville. I mean, this guy. I thought he had his head up the wrong end of his anatomy and that he was headed and dragging me right along with him. So I asked him a question in response. You know, sometimes lawyers do that. You ask a question, and when I answer your question, I answer your question with a question. And that's what I did to this guy. I answered his question with a question. He said, do you practice the sacrifices? And immediately I perceived that if I answered the question, yes, I do, he's going to say, don't you know the sacrifices have been abolished? And if I said, no, I don't practice the sacrifices, he's going to say, how can you claim to practice the Mosaic law if you don't practice the sacrifices? It's one of those damned if you do and damned if you don't kind of questions, you know. Are you still beating your wife on Wednesday? Just answer yes or no. It's what we call in law a forked question. Forked. That means that you can't answer this question and come out of here alive. That's what the bottom line is. So when you ask a question like that, and that's kind of what this one is here, since nothing you say matches the Bible description of these places, people, or processes, what do you mean, nothing that I say matches the Bible? Every single word matches the Bible. I'm going to show you that. I didn't read any book with inner history someplace. There may be a book with inner history. I don't know. But these 16 indicia I pulled right out of the scripture. I'm going to show you how to do that. Well, I asked this guy, I said, well, don't you practice the sacrifices here in Tennessee? And the guy was really incensed. When I said, well, don't you commit adultery with your neighbor's wife? I mean, I couldn't have shocked him anymore. And he denied it. I mean, he just came right out of the chute. He says, no, we're Christians here. We don't practice the sacrifices. And he was very defensive. And he was just adamant. No, we do not practice the sacrifices. Well, I kind of figured, you know, that was going to be his answer. We don't practice the sacrifices here in Tennessee. Now, if you've ever read about these sacrifices, there's a whole book that just deals with nothing but sacrifices, the Book of Numbers. Well, Book of Leviticus also talks a lot about sacrifices and the sacrificial system, and how the priests worked with, you know, they'd kill an animal and cut off the right front shoulder and send that over here, and then they'd burn blood and fat on the altar and take the innards outside the camp. I mean, there's all these stories here in Leviticus and Numbers about these sacrifices. And so, Nomi, and I guess that's the way you pronounce your name there. I'm not trying to be rude to you or anything like that. It's N-O-M-I, Nomi, or Nami or something. So I said, well, and I described this to the guy. I said, well, you know, today I was driving in here to the hotel, and I saw a guy in a car up on the on-ramp to the freeway, and he had a thingy that he was pointing out his window at me. What was that? And so the guy said, well, that was a highway patrolman. That's a radar gun, and he was testing your speed. I said, oh. And so I said, what was he doing that for? Well, he was seeing if you were speeding. Okay, so what if I was speeding? Then what? Well, it's against the law. Oh, speeding is against the law. Yeah, yeah. Well, okay, let's suppose I was speeding and that's against the law. What was he going to do? He's going to come out and give you a ticket. What was he going to do that for? Well, because you're breaking the law. I said, oh, I didn't know that. Okay. Well, let's suppose that he didn't give me a ticket. And let's suppose I wouldn't sign the ticket. Then what's he going to do? Well, he would arrest you. Put you in jail. Arrest me and put me in jail. Because I was speeding? Yes, yes, of course. Because you were speeding, he was going to arrest you and put you in jail. And so he described that, and I described to him this following scenario. I saw that this was a Christian in distress over doctrine, so I apologized for my outrageous suggestion that he might be a practitioner of the sacrificial system of Tennessee, and I explained that I was a stranger from a far, far land called Idaho, and that I had heard that the people of Tennessee practiced the Levitical priesthood, that is, sacrifices and heave offerings under another name, that they didn't call it sacrifices and priesthoods, that they called it the judicial system. He stared at me for, it says here, a few minutes. He didn't stare at me for a few minutes. He stared at me for a few seconds. You know how people, you know, when you make an outrageous statement, they just look at you with a blank stare like, I can't believe I heard that. It doesn't go on for a few minutes, although that's what the text here says in my story here called The Levitical Priesthood of Tennessee. He looked at me as if I had just announced that I was Mork from Ork. So I asked him if they had state highway patrolmen in Tennessee, and he admitted that they did. I asked him if they had police, lawyers, judges, courts, courthouses, courtrooms, and bars and benches and fines for criminal activities. And he said, well, of course we do. Of course we do. So I looked at him and I said that they told me the truth then in far-off Idaho, that the people of Tennessee were indeed a religious lot. And once more he gave me that strange look and asked how the judicial system was religious. And so I told him this story, and that's exactly what you're asking me here, Nomi. You're saying, what in the hell connection does the book of Leviticus and Numbers have to do with the judicial system? Now, you read the story, and I explained it to you. See? You read the story, and I explained it to you. And evidently, you didn't get it. Evidently. Because you said there's nothing that you say matches the Bible. I can only presume that you must have read all 1,189 chapters. If you've read all 1,189 chapters of the Bible, then you must have it down pat. And that there's not a word of truth in my statements. So I said, you drive down the road at 80 miles an hour, and the policeman, who's ever vigilant and looking for crime... All right, let's pause right there. Crime. In the Bible, Nomi, what is crime? In 1 John 3, verse 4. Go look that up. 1 John 3, 4. It says, sin is the transgression of the law. Now, what is crime? Crime. C-R-I-M-E. What is it? There's no inner process, no inner book, no inner history, just 1 John 3, verse 4. What is sin? The Bible tells you what sin is. Sin is the transgression of the law. So when I see a highway patrolman out there with his little gun and he's pointing it at me, I say to myself, my God, what's he looking for? Well, he's not looking for sin. He's not religious. He's looking for crime. He's looking for a criminal. He's looking for somebody that's breaking the law so he can go out there and arrest him. That's his job. That's what he does for a living. Some people put pipes together. Some people cut sticks and nail them together. We call them plumbers and carpenters. Highway patrolmen are professional crime investigators are constantly looking for criminal behavior. They're looking for sin. That's what they're looking for. They're looking for sinners. Was there ever a time in history when people did that? In the Bible. Is there ever a place in the Bible where somebody's looking for a sinner? Can you identify a sinner? I'll give you an example. There's a law in the Bible and it says, you shall not reap the corners of your fields. And that's because you're supposed to leave the corners of your fields and the gleanings for the poor. President Reagan, when he was governor of California, called that workfare. The Bible calls that gleaning. President Reagan called it workfare. He said, we want these people to work. And that's what gleaning is all about. They got to go out and work. See? And if you didn't leave the corners of your field, then you would be in violation of that law. You would be breaking that law. You would be sinning. You would be committing a crime. So all by myself, Nomi, I just put the two together. I just used reason, logic, and common sense. And I said, well, if the highway patrolman is looking for me speeding, and back in Moses' day, they were looking for some guy that reaped the corners of his field because he was a greedy sucker, and he wanted to get more than his share, and so he didn't want to leave anything for the poor. So now, what does the highway patrolman do? Well, he comes out and he gives you a ticket. If he catches you drunk driving, for instance, you know, he'll arrest you and take you to jail. If you're just speeding, he'd probably give you a ticket. But if you were drunk driving on the road, he'd arrest you and take you to jail. Now, what happens to people when they catch them breaking the law? Well, back in ancient times, they used to catch them, and then they would bring them to a Levitical priest. And this guy had to do something. You know, he had to expunge himself. Hang on. That fixed that static. All right, so if you're driving down the road at 80 miles an hour, the policeman, who's ever vigilant looking for crime, if he sees you and he roars in hot pursuit, and when he catches up with you, he asks you for your driver's license. He notes that it does not give you permission to drive at 80 miles an hour. So he arrests you. He takes you to the nearest jail from where you're brought before the judge, sitting on the bench behind the bar. All right, so if you have never experienced this, go down to your local courthouse. And then just ask somebody there, where's a courtroom? And in the back of the courtroom, there's some pews there. You know, in church, you call them pews. They're long benches. And you can go sit down and watch the proceedings. Now, this guy wants to arrest you and put you in jail. The Apostle Peter, in the New Testament, in the book of Acts, was arrested and put in ward. Sometimes those are called dungeons. They'd arrest people and put them in dungeons. Or they would arrest them, they'd put them in ward. Moses is talking about a guy that was gathering sticks one day on the Sabbath day. And they put him in ward. They locked him up. They restrained him. Okay? Well, what do you call that? Well, it really doesn't make any difference if you call it jail or the dungeon or restraint or in ward or jail or, you know, hang a label on. But the process is exactly the same. So back in Moses' day, when they caught this guy gathering sticks on the Sabbath day, they put him in ward seeking, well, what are we going to do with him? So they brought him to trial in front of Moses. Moses, the chief judge. And Moses found him guilty of breaking the Sabbath day and condemned him to death by stoning. Took him out and stoned him to death for breaking the Sabbath. Not a very kind and gentle God we have there now, is he? Not kinder and gentler like George Bush. Just wanted to point that out. Now, I don't write the history. I don't write the Bible. And I don't make the laws. I'm just a reporter. And I'm reporting to you that they put the guy in ward. So then I went a step further and I drew the parallel. I said, well, if you've got a policeman over here who arrests you and puts you in jail, and you've got Moses who restrains you and puts you in ward, I don't know what the hell kind of jail they had out there in Mount Sinai. I don't know if they had a bunch of sticks that they'd strung together, or if they had some bars made out of steel. I don't know if they had a building that they'd made out of rocks or something like that. I don't know. Hell they had, but they restrained him in some way. It says they put him in ward, whatever putting in somebody in ward is. And I noticed that they did that with Peter. They put him in prison. The Apostle Paul was mentioned time and again. He says he's been imprisoned often. Did you know that the Apostle Paul was a repeat offender? Constantly put in jail? He was jailed often. I had a policeman ask me one time. He said, "Hey, Gordon, do you know how many times you've been jailed?" George Gordon has been jailed often. I told him, I said, "No, I don't know." He says, 32 times. 32. I didn't know. I didn't keep track. I didn't count. I don't put notches on my gun every time somebody locks me up in jail. Now, most of you Christians out there, you're aghast. You're saying, "Oh my God, I can't listen to a fool like this. Why, he's a jailbird." Can you name anybody in the Bible that wasn't jailed? Any of the apostles that weren't jailed, didn't spend some time in the slammer? Hell, they took your Messiah and executed him for treason, for crying out loud. Wasn't he a criminal? God, you're getting me excited now, Nomi. It's almost like talking about lawyers. Gets my adrenaline flowing. Well, let's go through this list over here. This policeman over here. And I called him the high priest servant. Where did I get the word the high priest's servant? Comes out of the New Testament. See, when they took Jesus, remember the night that they took Jesus? Peter, in the garden, whipped out his sword. He was armed. I know, it's terrible. He was armed and dangerous. Had a weapon longer than 6 inches. Here in this state, if you got a knife that's 6 inches, you got to carry it in a holster. Here's Peter. You know, he's carrying this sword. I know, he whipped it out and he cut off the high priest's servant's ear. Who in the hell is this high priest servant? Today we call him a highway patrolman. We call him Detective O'Houlihan, or we call him policeman so-and-so. I got the word the high priest servant and compared it to the policeman of today. I got it out of the Bible. I got it out of, I don't know, I didn't look it up exactly, but it's around Matthew 25 or 26. Just look up servant in a concordance, and you look at that, and you look at around Matthew 25, 26, 27, along in there, and you're going to see the high priest servant. That's where I got that. Okay, I got it out of the Bible. I didn't get it out of, what'd you say here, inner history. Crime, sin, the word sin, you'll find it in 1 John 3, verse 4. I get it right this time. 1 John 3, verse 4. Sin is the transgression of the law. Well, what is the transgression of the law today in modern America, Canada, Australia, France, Russia, China? It's called crime. However you pronounce it in your language, in whatever country you live in, when you break the law of the land, they call it crime. And that makes you a criminal. And when they catch you, they want to put you in jail. Now, in this country, we call it jail. We call it prison. We call it incarceration. Okay, well, in the Bible, Moses put this guy in ward, locked him up. In the New Testament, it's called dungeon, prison, you know. Okay, so I didn't get that from some inner history either. Where's all this taking place? Well, today, in my county, our jail is in our courthouse. That's where we traditionally have people locked up in jail, because in ancient times they used a temple, and they called it the tabernacle out in the wilderness, but you know, later on, a guy by the name of Solomon built a temple. In Greece, you'll see a number of these temples. In Rome, you'll see the ruins of these temples. Well, what is a temple? What did they use those temples for? What did they do there? Were they selling insurance? You know, were they manufacturing chariots? Were they feeding horses? No, none of the above. They were conducting public business there. Public business. What kind of public business? Religious public business, we would call it today. And that's why I drew this analogy. I said, have you ever been to church? You walk into a church, if you've never been in one. You walk in a church and you take a look at the furniture in there. And then you'll notice, normally, when you enter a church, you enter it from what we call the front door, which is the rear. All of the seats are facing forward. And there'll be an aisle right up the middle where the door is. When you open the door to enter this church, it's exactly the same. When you open the door to enter the courtroom in the courthouse, it's the back, not the front, not the side. And there's a long aisle that leads straight up to a raised platform. What is that raised platform? Well, in church, you call it the altar. In the Bible, it's called the altar. What do you do at the altar? You make sacrifices. Make sacrifices. When you go to court and you open the door to the courtroom and you look forward, you're going to look forward to the bench. A raised platform. And somebody's going to be working up there on that raised platform. What do you call that guy? You call him the judge. Today, in modern America, we call him the judge. Okay. What do you call this guy over at the church? Well, you call him the priest. Okay. Well, how's this priest dressed? In a long dress. The priest is dressed in this long robe, this dress. Now look at the judge. How is he dressed? Know me. How is he dressed? In a long dress. And he sits up here on the bench. Now we've changed the names. That's why in the Levitical priesthood of Tennessee, I put two lines here. See, on the left-hand line, you've got the word policeman. And in the right-hand line, you've got the high priest servant. Peter cut off the high priest servant's ear. Crime. I went to 1 John 3:4. Crime is sin. In the Bible, it's called sin. That's the old King James word for crime. And today we call it a crime. Going to jail is being put in ward. Got that right from Moses. In that story where, I didn't look up the scripture here, but just look up ward, W-A-R-D, in Strong's Concordance. And then you'll find that this guy was gathering sticks on the Sabbath day, and they put him in ward. They restrained him. And then they took him to Moses. Where was Moses working? Moses worked out of the tabernacle. That was Moses' office. The judge has an office. It's in the courthouse. Public business is conducted at the courthouse. The public business of the state of Missouri is conducted in our state capitol. We have a big building up there in Jefferson City. It's called the Capitol Building. In Washington, D.C., we call that the Capitol. That's where our business is. Public business. That's our temple. That's our national temple in Washington, D.C. Every country in the world has one of these national temples. Politics, boys and girls, is religion. You people are a religious lot. And you're practicing religion in opposition to the God of creation. That's called idolatry, and that idolatry is going to get you killed. That's the bottom line. That's what happened down there with Hurricane Katrina, and you're down there practicing Mardi Gras and all this fun and pleasure that you're having down there. I always wondered about that, you know. About this time of year, about Easter time, tornadoes come down Tornado Alley, and invariably they knock down churches, and you just raise hell with people, and they cry, and they lament, and they weep, and they wail, and one thing. Nobody's ever able to connect the dots. Why does God knock your churches and your houses down during Easter? Good people, good Christians. Has it ever occurred to you that the God of Easter isn't the same God of the Bible? I know it's a wild concept. That maybe the God that brought you Katrina is not the same God of the Mardi Gras. If you ever thought about that. I know it's a strange concept, but if you start connecting some of these dots. Now we're up here to the courtroom, which is in the courthouse. And the courtroom and the church are just two different places for two different religions. That's all. They both come out of the Bible. They both, and the furniture and the way this thing is set up just exactly like the old temple back in Old Testament times described in the Bible. And if you want to take a look at the temple and how this temple was scoped out over here, you go to the book of Ezekiel toward the end of the book, about chapter 40 through 48. There's about 7 or 8 chapters, and it describes this temple. I mean, it was a big, imposing building, just like our state capitol, just like our capitol building in Washington. Very important building. And the national business is taken care of right there. That's where your laws are enacted. That's where your judges go to the office every day. That's where people, you know, in public life do their business. They don't do business in some office down the street. They do business there in the capitol building. Your representatives and your senators do business in the capitol, in the temple. Those are temple priests. We call it the civil service. You know, in ancient times they called it the Levitical priesthood. Today we call it the civil service. And you build these temples all over. You got police stations, you know, and these are the high priest servants. And these people go out here and do the bidding of the high priest. The high priest enacts the laws, or he enforces the laws. And then there's got to be, you know, guys that carry billy clubs and guns and mace and so on, and they go out here and enforce those laws. Yeah, I got to give you a reminder here before I forget. And that reminder is that you're listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. And the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Remember, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it's open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, go to the homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives. It can be accessed through the website. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. That's for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on economics, history, health, religion, politics, education, science, news, and current events, and we do that 7 days a week. The law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. If you'd like to order one, just call the law school and ask for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. The opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of our advertisers, sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we are reviewing the Levitical Priesthood of Tennessee, which deals with lawyers, too, because we're coming up to a guy named an intercessor, because when you go into this courtroom, there's a guy named a judge. He's sitting up there at the bench. That's called the altar. In the Bible, they call that the altar. The altar is where you do a sacrifice. Now, in Old Testament times, you can see descriptions of these sacrifices. If I went in and I was going to do a sacrifice, I'd have to come home here to my ranch, and I'd have to round up my sheep, and I would have to catch a male lamb of the first year. Now, of the first year means that he's not 2 years old yet. He's not 2 years old. He might be 9 months old, he'd be of the first year. Here, he could be 13 months old, he'd be of the first year, because he's not 2 yet. Once he gets to be 2 now, he's not of the first year. So I've got to catch a young male lamb, and I've got to take him down to the high priest. In ancient times, and you'll read about this, he'd take that lamb and he'd kill it, and he'd take the fat and blood, and he'd burn it on the altar. And this altar is described as being a pile of rock. And it can't have any mortar on it. You can't have an iron tool on it. And so today, when you take a look in your churches and in your courthouses, you'll notice that these altars, these benches, or the altar in the church, they're graven. Graven images, graven altars. That violates the altar statute, but that's neither here nor there. But both the judge and the priest are working at the altar. Well, in Old Testament times, the Levite or the Aaronic priest, depending upon where he was working now, because you've got two priesthoods. You've got this national priesthood called the federal judiciary, and then you've got the state judiciary, which is a lower rank, higher rank, lower rank. In ancient times, you had a higher rank priesthood called the Aaronic priesthood, and a lower rank priesthood called the Levitical priesthood. I didn't go to any inner history. I just went to the Bible and looked at those two examples, Aaronic priests and Levitical priests. That's what I did. Got right out of the King James. Got right out of Leviticus and Numbers. And then I compared that to what we're doing today, to the practices today. Now, it is true, if you went up to your local judge and you said, "Are you a priest?" he'd look at you and deny it. He would say, "No, I'm not a priest." Jesus said you would know them by their fruits. I remember one time I was out in California and a skunk came by. And I said, "Watch out for that skunk." And this guy said to me, "That's not a skunk, that's a civet cat." I'd never heard the word civet cat before. I thought that a little black and white animal, you know, a black animal with a white stripe down its back that raises its tail and then spits out this nasty stuff and smells real bad, I thought that was a skunk. That just goes to show you what the hell I know. This guy corrected me. He said, "That's a civet cat." I said, "Oh, okay." So I just wanted you to know that you can call it whatever you want, but it smells real bad, stinks real bad, and out here in the country where I'm from, we call it a damn skunk. Now, that's where that's at. Now, you can call you can call this judge something else if you want to, but he's a priest. He dresses like a priest. He acts like a priest. He performs like a priest. He functions like a priest. I call him a priest. But if you went up and asked him, he'd say, "No, I'm not a priest, I'm a judge." If you went over to the preacher and you said, "Are you a priest?" He might say, "Yes, I'm a priest." Now, he's telling the truth. He would not act like a judge. He's supposed to. That's his commission. That's his job. And if you'll take a look at Numbers, let's see if I got this right. Let me get my King James here. Let me whip over here to about Numbers 36. It's Numbers 35 or 36. I'll give you an example right out of the Bible of an actual case that was decided. A decided case. Yeah, Numbers chapter 36. Over an inheritance. Judges decide judicial questions. Priests in your local church should decide these judicial questions. Jews do it this way. I mean, these Jews are crazy people, but I forgot the name of their organization now, but when a Jew has a controversy with another Jew, he doesn't sue that Jew down here in the local federal court. He doesn't take that guy to court. He takes him to this Jewish court where a rabbi or a bunch of rabbis, I don't know how many are there, I'm not up on Jewish judicial practice, but the rabbi decides this. Not Christians. Christians don't do this. Christians don't follow the Bible. Christians don't do anything that God ever told them. Never have, and I doubt if they ever will. No, Jews do. In fact, the Apostle Paul told us, he said, "You know, you ought not to be taking these people down here and suing them at the local court. This is something that should be decided. You know, you Lutherans, when you have a controversy with a fellow Lutheran, you should take that to your Lutheran minister, your priest, your preacher, whoever he is, and he should decide this matter pursuant to the scripture, which we see here in Numbers chapter 36. And I'm not going to read this to you because you can read it for yourself, Nomi, but this is the story. There's six girls here, and there's an inheritance. And they didn't know how to divide this inheritance up because this guy had died without a male heir. And so they took this case up to the Holy of Holies on the Day of Atonement, and God himself decides that. Our Supreme Court here in the United States is patterned after this system of law. When we have a local issue down here at the bottom, you know, my local Judge Jacobs, and he can't decide something, I appeal it up to Judge Turner. Judge Turner, he can't decide it. Or he decides it and I don't like his decision. So I appeal it up to the Court of Appeals in Springfield. And they give me a decision. I don't like their decision. So I appeal it up to my state Supreme Court. And they give me a decision. I say, I don't like your decision. I appeal it to the United States Supreme Court. That's the Holy of Holies. And that occurred once a year. On the Day of Atonement, God Almighty himself sat on the mercy seat in the holy place, called the Holy of Holies. I didn't get this out of some inner book or inner history. I didn't write this, Nomi. And so God gave this decision. Now here's the story. It's in Numbers chapter 36. And these six girls over here, you know, need some direction on how to handle this inheritance from their father. And they got it. And there's the story of it. Now, that's called an appeal. So if you look here, I said civil service, judicial system, Levitical priesthood. So I got that out of the book of Leviticus and Numbers. Now, the Supreme Court, this decision, this is number 15 here, is the Holy of Holies. Now, in ancient times, you took it to your local Levite. If you didn't like the decision you got out of your local Levite, you could take it up to an Aaronic priest. He would listen to it. He'd give you a decision. If you didn't like it, you could take it up to Moses. And if you didn't like the decision you got out of Moses, Moses would take it into the Holy of Holies on the Day of Atonement once a year, and God Almighty himself would decide it. And that's the last word. Here in America today, the last word is the Supreme Court of the United States. There's no other body that you can go to, that you can appeal to. That's the end of the line. God has an end of the line. And when he makes a decision, that's it. All right, so that's where I got that, just in case you want to know. Now, there's a little story in here about this lawyer. Remember, we were talking about lawyers this week. A lawyer is an intercessor. Jesus is our intercessor. And if you look up the word intercessor, it says Jesus is our intercessor. He intercedes between God the Father and Satan, who is our accuser. Satan is a prosecuting attorney who is constantly, day and night, accusing us before God the Father. If you want to know where Satan lives, he lives up in the third heaven, and he's constantly accusing us. He's about to be thrown out. One of these days he's going to be thrown out down here on planet Earth, and then all hell breaks loose. That's another story for another day, but Satan's a lawyer, a prosecuting attorney. Prosecuting attorneys sit in the seat of Satan the devil, constantly accusing us. Then you've got to have a lawyer, and the lawyer assumes the role of Jesus, the intercessor, who is defending us. Now, go into the courthouse, good students, and when court is in session, you walk up and you sit on that rail. There's a rail that goes across the courtroom, and there's a swinging gate in there, and that rail separates you lay people who are here in the courtroom listening. It's a public forum. And the proceedings which are going on the other side of that bar. It's called the bar. Well, in the temple it was called the veil. And when Jesus died on the cross, remember? Jesus died. The veil was rent in twain. That's what my Bible says. The old King James, rent in twain. What does that mean? What's that all about? That's why in the New Testament it says, come boldly to the throne of grace. come boldly to the throne of grace. You have a right to come before God Almighty himself, you personally. You don't need that intercessor. The Messiah, who is your intercessor, not the lawyer, not the lawyer. That's the guy that you go up before the high priest with. But you can come pro se to God the Father. That's why Jesus, in the Beatitudes, about Matthew 5, he said, how do you pray? You pray, Our Father, which art in heaven. You can come directly. Did you know that you could do your own petition? You can make your own petition go right to God the Father, directly. I know it's a wild new concept. Jesus came down and revealed that to you. It's in Matthew chapter 5. I didn't get that from some inner history. I didn't get that from some other book. Go read it for yourself. So here's Numbers 36. Here's 1 John 3:4. Here's being put in ward. I didn't look that scripture up. All right. Now you go in here in court today and you plea. Judge says, well, how do you plead today? Well, I want to plead guilty today. Okay. Then if you plead guilty, that means that you're guilty of a crime. In Old Testament times, you'd be guilty of a sin. I mean, you know, I don't think that takes rocket science to put those two together. I'm not real smart, but then, you know, I ain't brain dead. Now, once this guy, the judge here, finds you guilty of a crime, that makes you a criminal. I mean, you know, before you're a criminal, you have to be convicted of a crime. And we presume that you're innocent until you're convicted, until you're proven guilty, and this makes you a sinner. See, a criminal is a sinner. If crime is sin, then a criminal is a sinner. I don't think that takes a great stretch to see that. And now we've got this fine and court costs. Now remember that lamb? Let's suppose that I reap the corners of my field. The high priest's servant sees this. He reports me, arrests me, takes me into the Levite. And the Levite says, well, we find you guilty, and the fine for that is a ram of the first year. Now my sheep are worth about $200. A ram of the first year. I got one for Passover. Fine looking animal. If I took him over to the sale, I'd probably get $200 for him. So I got to come in here and I got to take this $200 ram, take it over to the Levite who's going to cut his throat, take his blood and fat and burn it on the altar. And then he's going to take that animal, cut it up, and he's going to divide it up between the Levites and the Aaronic priest. Now here's the kicker. He's going to cut off the right front shoulder and he's going to send that off to the Aaronic priest. Do you know what happens to your fine today? Well, here's the way we do it in this state, and this is the way it was done in Idaho, and I presume all the rest of the states do the same. When I pay a $200 fine in front of Judge Jacobs up here, he takes $20 of that and sends it to Jefferson City, 10%. Did you know that? Yeah, he takes the tithe and sends it to Jefferson City. Did you know that when a Levite collected a tithe back in Old Testament times, he sent 10% of that to the Aaronic priests? That's the way the Aaronic priest took it. Was supported. So if you look up tithe, T-I-T-H-E, in the King James, in your Strong's Concordance, and you trace out that tithe, you'll find that the Levites paid a tithe, and that tithe was the tenth of their income. Now that Levite is going to keep that sheep that I take him. That's called a sacrifice. Let me ask you this, Nomi. Have you ever been into court? Have you ever been fined? And did you ever pay the fine? Okay, well, maybe you never have. If you never have, okay, go in and watch it. Because when the judge levies the fine, he's going to levy court costs. And in Old Testament times, when they levied the fine, they levied court costs. The fine in Old Testament times was called the sin offering. The sin offering was the lamb. And the heave offering was two turtle doves. Go look up the word turtle doves in the concordance. Look up the word heave, H-E-A-V-E, heave offering. You can't have a sin offering without a heave offering. You can have a heave offering without a sin offering, but you can't have a sin offering without a heave offering. Today, in America, you can have court costs without a fine, but you can't have a fine without court costs. Because the court cost is what you pay the judge for doing the proceeding. It's the judge's payment It's the priest's payment. It's called the Eve offering. I didn't get that now from some inner history. Got that out of Leviticus and Numbers. And you'll see that under heave offering. Now, if you didn't like this process, you could appeal. And that's what Numbers 36 was. I showed you that a little earlier. Numbers 36 is an appellate process. Our appellate process in America today, and all you Anglo-Saxons, I don't care where you're living, in Australia, New Zealand, or France, or wherever, you got the same process. You call it by different names. You Frenchmen have your own names for it, but you're doing the same thing that we're doing over here. If the Apostle Paul were resurrected today, he could walk in to the United States District Court and practice law today, March 20th, 2006. All he'd have to brush up on the local rules. No doubt about that. I mean, you know, probably in his day, notice was probably a little different. Serving subpoenas was probably a little different. And it varies from state to state, you know, the time that you have to motion up a motion hearing and so on. But the Apostle Paul was a trained lawyer. He was a prosecuting attorney. He studied law at the feet of Gamaliel, which is the equivalent today of having a Harvard or Yale or Princeton law school degree. I mean, he was in the top 400 of his class. I mean, he was right up there. And he was a pretty good lawyer. And the Apostle Paul was practicing the Roman civil law, and he was also practicing the Mosaic law. He said that he was from the tribe of Benjamin, and that he was a Pharisee. And he was zealous. I mean, he was out persecuting Christians, which you call Christians. I'm not sure those people call themselves Christians, but you call them Christians today. And so there's the story. That's the way this judicial system works in America today. It works that way in Australia, New Zealand, and England, and Ireland, and all Anglo-Saxon countries. In fact, it has now been converted from the justice system to the adversarial system. We now have an adversarial system. And we have thrown away the Ten Commandments, and we've thrown away the judicial processes that we get out of the Bible. And we've hung other labels and names on them, Nomi. No doubt about that. We've got other names. We don't call it the high priest servant. We call him a policeman today. We don't call it sin. We call it crime. We don't call it ward. We call it jail. We don't call it the temple. We call it the courthouse. We don't call it the holy place. We call it the courtroom. We don't call it the high priest. We call him the judge. We don't call it the altar. We've got a new name. It's called the bench. We don't call it the veil. We call it the bar. We don't call him the intercessor. We call him the attorney or the lawyer. We don't call it a prayer. We call it a plea. We don't call it a crime, or we don't call it a sin. We call it a crime. These names that we have replaced, it doesn't change the practice. The practice is the same. You'll know them by their fruits. That's what the Messiah said. You'll know them by the fruits. Just take a look at what's going on, and you can identify it right out of the Bible. All 16 of them. Okay, we're about out of time. I'm going to have to wrap it up right here and give you a final reminder that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc. For more information, go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an education service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We'll leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. Until then, thanks for listening, and good night, friends.